Welcome to Threshold Stories, crossing thresholds one story at a time. I'm your host, Jeff Gora. Podcast 116, discussions of the Nepal trip for 2022. Threshold Stories, crossing your thresholds one story at a time. Guys, thanks for joining the call. Let me quickly introduce everybody before we get right into the meat of the conversation. Next to me, we have Kristen Hetzel. Say hello.
Hi, guys.
Kristen and I have known since 2014. She is also a Team USA athlete with me. If you've listened to my podcast, you know I have a lot of conversations about that. Tom is not a Team USA athlete, and I met him as part of this trip, but he's probably the most international of everybody here. Tom, say hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Tom's currently in LA, but he's migrated across the great earth many times over in the last few months, and he'll be literally at my house, or should I say in my village, in about a week. And Tatum, whom I introduced as somebody who lives in my village, Charlotte, of course, being a village. She's about 15 miles away from the Cliff Ride. She's an elementary school teacher in this area, and she decided she wanted to go with it. Say hi, Tatum.
Hello.
So, guys, you guys have all the stories. My stories are told on this topic. So, Tom, let's just jump right in with you. You're the only person in this group that did both halves of the trip. So when we do these trips, I have half of it that's a hardcore Himalayan expedition of the sort you can find online, and then half where it's hardcore village where there's no tourism going on. Do your best, compare and contrast about what those two experiences meant to you.
Yeah, great. I mean, I contradict you that you were also on both halves of the trip, Jeff, the first half was like, you know, just seeing some of the most amazing landscapes I've ever seen in my life. So we went trekking into the Long Tong Valley, and it's just both sides, absolutely huge. I think I said to Jeff, it's sort of like, you know, Yosemite, but much bigger and much more, it looks much bigger and much more epic. And he was like, yeah, that's because it is. And, you know, and then especially just climbing to the very peak, we got to about 15, just over 15,000 feet and sort of seeing this huge glacier melting. It was just unbelievable landscapes that I'll never forget. So that was what the first half was like. And then the second half was, we were in the Dang Valley and just really getting to know lots and lots of people in Nepal and sort of try to work on my Nepali a little bit. And, you know, the Wi-Fi at Chucky China, which is like, is now Wi-Fi, like the one phrase I knew. It was really amazing just getting to see like how the schools worked and just meet a whole range of people and families. And like just see a more typical Nepali village, which is obviously kind of very different from the mountain villages.
That's exactly what you saw. So let's jump outside of the context of the actual trip, Tom. And I'm going to go to you, Kristen. What convinced you that you wanted to go to the Himalaya and go on a trek at the end of your athletic season?
I have always wanted to go to Nepal. It's been a bucket list thing for me to hike in the Himalayas. So when I heard about this trip, I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. I have to do this. And the timing was great because it was at the end of my racing season. It was at a point in my life that I was trying to figure out some things. So I just thought it would be a great time to have some quiet peace, to be away from phones, computers, all of that stuff, and just be in the Himalayas.
So her experience, for guys listening in, she wanted to go, but one of the first things she did was she recruited others to go with her, which is normal. When somebody says, I want to go this, they generally bring people they know. So Tamara's not on the call. She got invited. And of course, Tamara engaged Tom. So it's kind of like everybody's, you know, six steps removed from Kevin Bacon. You've probably heard that phraseology. So Tom's the Kevin Bacon in our trip and the distant throughout the whole thing. So Tom, let me go back to you before I jumped over to Tatum. I got a question for her. You and I had an experience when we were in the Dong Valley where we got some custom clothing made. Through that process, what that was like.
Yeah, I know. We met some very nice tailors and we thought, let's get a suit made. And they were extremely efficient. So, I mean, I've had suits made in London and, you know, it sort of takes 2 months and then you get measured again and then blah, blah, blah. We went there, I think, because we went with our friend Kopi Ram, who's the local politician. They were like, and everyone was like, they're leaving in 3 days, you've got to be fast. And they were. So it was great. We got stuff measured up. And 3 days later, we picked up the suits and Jeff and I were looking. So I think Jeff had some trousers made, I think, but not a suit this time. We were looking very spiffy in our in our new clothes.
The screen right now is gonna show us off. Yeah, that was amazing. I decided, Tom, every time I go from now on out, I'm gonna get some good clothing made.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I just wore those trousers on a long flight as well, and they were really comfortable on the flight. Like sometimes suit trousers aren't, right? But yeah.
So Tatum, you were the only person who really connected your professional life in the United States with the life in Nepal, meaning you're a classroom teacher here in the United States. You teach elementary school, fifth grade at a local school in this area. And when we were there, we spent literally the whole time in an elementary school, but we visited other schools, but we literally slept in the top floor of an elementary school. So what was the classroom experience like for you in Garai?
I would say shocking, to say the least, because I went in with no concept of what it would be. I had no expectation or anything. But specifically at the Himulchi school, that was probably the most interesting one, because that one I saw the most passion within the classrooms. There was stuff all over the walls, little diagrams. I'm now in a group message where I get little videos of the kids learning each day, which is the cutest thing. And you just see the passion that the teachers put in, because all of the stuff they make is hand created. Where if you come into my classroom, some of the things are hand created, where other things are pre-created that have been purchased by the district or whatever. So it's just interesting to see that they have so much passion behind their education, and their classroom structure is so much different. There's no one-to-one desk or one-to-one Chromebook correspondence in their room. It's all, I'm going to throw some kids in here. We're going to sit on the floor and we're going to learn. And we're going to learn two languages. We're not just learning Nepali. We're also learning English at the same time, which I think that's so valuable, because that's definitely something we don't do in the American education system. So definitely.
When I was there in 1987 and learning the language, I always hung out with the little kids because they were very forgiving if I screwed a word up, right? If you say the word shirt and inadvertently drop the R, an adult laughs at you. The kids over there don't think anything of it. They just have fun with it as you screw up along the way. That was wonderful, because you were so kind when you were working with the little kids there as they were practicing their English. You weren't ridiculing them like a lot of their teachers and peers would do, which was, I could see gravitating towards you as you spoke to them. It's pretty powerful stuff. So what has it been like telling the kids back in the United States about the classroom in Nepal?
Oh, I have made a slideshow of photos to show them, and we sat down and probably spent 45 minutes on it. They had so many questions, and I remember showing them one classroom. I think we were looking at a fourth grade classroom, so similar to my age group. And I believe there were four tables and like six benches, and the teacher told us there were 25 kids in that room, which is how many I have in my room. There was no way that my 25 fifth graders would have been content learning in that room, or would they have been learning effectively. And so they were shocked by that. And they were like, wow, we've got a really nice classroom. I'm like, yeah, you do. Appreciate it a little more. Let's take care of it. So
that's awesome.
So
on every trip I've ever done in Nepal, you guys have heard me say this because you were there. Somebody has a medical event, right? Somebody gets sick, whatever. So the fittest person literally I have ever taken to the Himalaya. that's you. Get sick at the highest point of the whole trip. So walk us through your experiencing that when we get to that camp and you discover you're sick and you come notify me, and then take us through the next 24 hours, what that was like for you.
Well, let's see. So I guess it's only fitting. I do tend to be also probably the most competitive person you've taken on the trip. So I'm the one that got the sickest. So I guess I won that award. But yeah, I was doing good the whole trip with the altitude. And when we stopped for lunch, we were at 12,800 feet. And I was feeling good, no problem. And I think it was just a lot of circumstances that happened at the time, just the timing was a little off, where I was, my lunch was running a little late. You guys were just taking off. And I was just thinking, well, I'll just catch up because I'm a fast hiker. Yep. And yeah, I started hiking. So I started hiking really fast. And I think that's where I got into trouble. So I just was hiking a lot faster than I should have been at that altitude. And I started getting really out of breath, but I thought, I'm fit. It's fine. I don't need to slow down.
Everybody listen. This is wisdom. Everybody listen. Keep going.
Yeah. And I thought of what you said, like, okay, if you're out of breath at these altitudes, you have to slow down. But then the fog was rolling in and it looked like it might storm. So it's just, I just was like, okay, I got it. We got to get there. And when we got to the summit, you know, I made it, which was good. I had a headache and I didn't feel good, but I thought, well, it'll go away. And I mentioned it to some of you guys that I had a headache and we just, you know, and then it was what it was, but then it about midnight, oh, it got so bad. I started projectile vomiting and I thought my brain was going to explode. So and that's when I came at you. YouTube
videos of you he's made.
I bet. Poor Tom. I came to see you and Tom in the room for help. And you took good care of me because obviously it was in the middle of the night. So we couldn't get down the mountain. Yeah,
there was no protocol to get you out of there until it was safe to get you out of there.
Yeah, and it was storming. It was just a lot of circumstances at once that convoluted into that situation where...
Well, let's talk about the next morning. You wake up after you get some rest, and I say, let's get out of Dodge. Talk us through that first 2 hours getting out of Dodge.
Well, when I got up...
Watch you go through a change that fast.
Yeah, we started hiking down, and really quickly, my body started... recovering. It was, I think we both decided it was only about 40 minutes that it took, right. Not maybe 800 feet we got down, and then my headache went away. I had even been having some just discoordination with my movements the night before because I'd had some cerebral edema. That started going away where I could actually walk normal and not be stumbling. And as you had said, I started getting back to my chatty self. So I recovered really quickly. And fortunately, I think that because I am in good shape, that my body's used to recovering. So that helped.
Well, we had a gift beyond words that included a whole lot of words after about an hour and a half of hiking. Tell everybody about that gift we inadvertently ran into on the trail, who was also dealing with yaks.
Oh, yes, that's right. They were dealing with yaks. We met a young couple, Sujita and Sandesh, who were in their early 20s, and they were, interestingly, she had had altitude sickness the night before too. It was a bad night for both of us, and we just really hit it off. They were a wonderful couple, so sweet, just really, really interested in talking with us and talking about America and just different cultures, we just really hit it off. And I was very interested in talking with them because on this trip, I had learned how Nepali people often do arranged marriages. And so it was fun to talk to them, young people who were a bit like going scandalous. They were dating secretly and their parents didn't know and all this stuff. So it was just fun to learn about them and learn about what young people are doing now.
Well, I watched you from being... You were keenly aware that you were deficient. You were not at your standard that you're used to for yourself. You have a high standard for yourself. And when those two came along and you guys started chatting as if this was the end of the world as you know it, you just went back to you. I mean, literally within 90 seconds of meeting those guys, you went back to you. I mean, it's like magic. It was like the best medicine ever.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm sure it distracted me from not feeling so great. And yeah, just to be, they had really good energy and really positive, fun vibes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Tom, back to the people of Nepal, you got two interrupted weeks with a Nepali politician. And tell everybody what that meant, what that looks like. What does it mean to be a Nepali politician? What was it like to watch him in action?
Yeah. So Kokiram was, a couple of things that I really like stood out in terms of like observing him. One is like, you know, he was just a very sort of like careful sort of about what he said. But then when he opened his mouth, even if it was in Nepali and I didn't really understand what he was saying, he was just like charismatic and something sort of comforting and, you know, kind of very, just very charismatic about him. And that sort of, so you can sort of see why he helps persuade people. And I saw him give a political speech when we were in Dang, and that was just sort of really amazing to see him like in action as well, and just very persuasive, very authoritative, like
was, that's correct,
really, really widely respected. So that was like really cool to see. And like, I mean, at the same time, he's, you know, for someone who's like that, he was an extremely humble guy. Like, you know, I think, I mean, he was hanging out with us and being really nice. So it's sort of, you know, seeing that that sort of combination, yeah, it was, that was great. And then another thing that was just kind of funny is that, you know, he was constantly on the phone. He had a magic cell phone that worked at like high altitude in the Himalayas. Everyone else's phones were like slowly dropping off, but it somehow, like, various constituents who, like, I just sort of imagined that like someone's wall fell down or some sort of scene like that from like a political comedy or something, and the constituents calling him up being like, you know, what are we gonna do about this? And then he's gotta deal with it and kind of like, you know, talk to other people and make deals and stuff like that. And, you know, so he was constantly on the phone. We made a joke, we called him Mr. President, because it was always like, you know, there's another call for Mr. President. And another, and along those lines, also when we were in Dang, another thing that just amused me was like, I think at least five times a day, maybe more, random sort of guys on motorcycles would drive up to like next to our Jeep or kind of, you know, the house that we happened to be at, and he and would jump out with papers then to sign, and he'd, you know, read it over, sign the papers, hand it back. And that seems to be a big part of his job as well. He's always like on the phone telling people, meet me here in an hour, and then they come on a motorcycle.
The CIA side of Nepali government.
Yeah.
Transactions on the motorcycle. Can you imagine President Biden zipping around on a motorcycle trying to get things done?
Yeah.
That's not, I mean,
or Nancy given his Pelosi, record, given it. His record on a normal bicycle, I don't think he would.
That's fine. Right, so I like to do these at a lot of the ends of the podcast. So let's, I got a couple, we're going to do, what, just give us a one or two sentence summary of, so Nepal for me is fill in the blank. Kristen?
Nepal for me is, it was peacefulness, it was camaraderie with my friends and getting to know the Nepali locals, and it was beautiful.
Cool.
Magical.
So following up on the camaraderie thing, I had a 2019 trek I did, and there, it did not have the camaraderie. Just, I can throw people under the bus. I was working for somebody else at the time. And interestingly enough, while we were there, some of the people in that group came back because they were unsuccessful the first time. And they were unsuccessful again the second time, which is kind of like proof pudding that Nepal quite isn't for everybody right there. But that was amazing to see the camaraderie we did have, though, between the Nepali mishmash that we had and the Americans and of course, Tom and that whole thing. You would not have predicted that sort of esprit de corps. It just, you just wouldn't. But it happened. That was, you know, I'm always going to treasure that part of the trip. So, Tom, Nepal for me is...
Yeah, I mean, amazing landscapes. I mean, I guess, sorry, like really, I'd summarize it as like, you know, like the biggest mountains in the world and the biggest hearts in the world, like the people that we met.
I'm going like, to steal that. That's a great
absolutely,
one.
You know, it blew my mind how many people were living in, you know, relatively poor conditions, but just was so happy and generous and full of kind of great spirit. Like, yeah, I'll never forget sort of like, you know, staying with Navaraj and Kogaram in Dang and just sort of seeing how they live, and just, you know, I was really touched by their families and just sort of, yeah.
Well, they'll always remember you guys, that's for sure. Tatum, literally, there's a little girl over there who's always going to remember you as well. So finish the sentence. Nepal for me is?
An experience I'll never forget. Definitely opened my eyes to embracing my passion a little more with kids. I know that's my passion, but getting to see it translate over in a place where I was 100% out of my comfort zone. I don't know. It was just kind of comforting to come home knowing what I'm doing is right and there's potential for me to do more with my passion. So kind of ignited that in me.
I'm going to give you mine. This is my 35th year of going to Nepal, and it always delivers. It's never underwhelmed. It's always, whatever expectation I've had, it's always met or exceeded every single time. Langtang, I knew of the earthquake that destroyed a section of it. That just ended up being a non-event. We walked literally right through the rubble, and we never stopped to have a mourning moment or a conversation about it all. The village was as awesome as it's ever been. Parting thoughts. Does anybody have any parting thoughts?
I just thought it was an awesome trip. It was so profound in so many ways. And yeah, definitely the trip of a lifetime.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I would second some of what Tatum said, but like, I think it just showed, I just saw in reality, like how this other part of the world is and sort of the potential you can have to sort of, you know, help and make a difference in that part of the world. And
that you did, that you did.
And so just, you know, it really opened my eyes in a much more sort of like intimate and complete way than I thought possible to the reality of life in other parts of the world.
Tatum, parting thought?
I don't know.
Right. So let me give you guys one. When we were in the Nepal Ganj airport, getting ready to fly back to Kathmandu and then fly back home, we met a couple who lived in Saudi Arabia. Her name was Kitty and his name was Brian. I told them what I was doing and they said, we want to help out. And they agreed to pay for all the teachers at the school to do the Annapurna Sanctuary Trek next year, which meant that's 5 people out of the 10 people maximum that are already accounted for 2023. And that was awesome. And I sent them a letter when we got back home showing them the 501(c) thing so they could write it off on their taxes. I showed them a picture of the staff. Tatum and Tom were in that picture, so they knew I wasn't making this up. And I said, this is wonderful. I so look forward to telling this the teachers that you guys have agreed to pay for all of them to go on a trek. And Brian emailed me back 2 days later and said, unfortunately, my wife died 2 days ago in Riyadh unexpectedly. And he just left it at that. And I called Tatum because I knew Tom was still traveling in Europe. And Tatum, remember, we were relatively speechless, just saying that was the last moment of giving of her life, literally. And then she died. She went to Kathmandu. The next day she flew to Riyadh. And the day after that, she died. And I didn't, of course, ask Brian what happened to her at all. But Brian sends me a note a week later and says, I want to honor my wife's last request. And just send me the bill and I'm going to pay for all those ladies to go to Nepal. And that just took my heart out. And that is what Nepal does to people. You see these others who are giving and all you can do is reciprocate with a heart of passion. And literally, even if it kills you, literally, I'm forever going to remember Kitty, even though I only got to spend 30 minutes talking with her. And all those women at the school, Tatum, who you got to hang out with, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to get to see the Annapurna Sanctuary in full next year, care of Brian and Kitty. Pretty cool story.
Awesome.
So this is a picture of them on the screen right here. Well, guys, thank you for the podcast time. I will send you guys some links to this and there'll be a little thing on the screen right here. You guys can see on if you'd like to participate in 2023. As you just heard, we're going to the Annapurna Sanctuary and there's still 5 seats left. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening to this chapter of Threshold Stories, Crossing Thresholds, one story at a time. Ready to cross more thresholds with me in 2 weeks. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or on my Facebook page at Jeff Gora Team USA.